There's kids being yelled at and beaten up at school. They're being called terrorists, which I can personally identify with because, I mean, they used to call me faggot. There's signs on back of cars, Bin Laden's a fag, kill all Bin Laden faggots.
There is something very insidious in portraying the history of the war for independence as a parade of the founding fathers. It seems very patriotic, but we shut out the voice of minorities. You shut out the voice of the 18th century version of gays and lesbians. The novel is no less a fiction than our traditional historical narrative is.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Finns win many marriage rights, U.S. gay and lesbian activists wage peace, and a novel approach to the founding queers of the American Revolution. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending September 29, 2001. Gays and lesbians in Finland will be able to legally register their partnerships next year. The Finnish Parliament this week voted 99-84 with 17 abstentions and absences to create registered partnerships, giving same-gender couples many of the rights of legal marriage. Those rights include status equal to marriage for purposes of inheritance, taxation, hospital visitation, and division of property on dissolution. However, the new law will not allow one partner to use the other's surname or co-adopt the other's children. Reiner Hiltunen, head of Finland's national gay and lesbian group SITA, said, "This at long last gives gay couples the rights they deserve, but it's a compromise, and we are disappointed that it doesn't secure the rights of children in a gay marriage because they can only be registered to one parent." Opposition from Finland's National Evangelical Lutheran Church and the Christian Democratic Party had defeated a similar bill in 1996.
Spain's opposition parties accused the ruling Partido Popular of succumbing to the dictates of the Catholic Church as the PP this week defeated five bills in the Congress of Deputies aimed at legal recognition of gay and lesbian partners. The various opposition parties proposing those bills emphasized the need to bring the law into line with the social reality of same-gender couples. A Partido Popular spokesperson argued against creating a new legal entity, registered partnerships, suggesting instead the expansion of existing legislation relating to common law couples. The PP also called heterosexual marriage a cornerstone of Spain's constitution. Some local governments in Spain have already recognized gay and lesbian partnerships.
In South Africa, two openly lesbian judges won a double victory for the rights of same-gender couples in the Pretoria High Court this week. Judge Franz Kagomo struck down as discriminatory laws which had prohibited Judge Anna DeVoe's partner, Suzanne Dutoit, from sharing parental status of her two adopted children and had barred Judge Kathy Satchwell's partner, Leslie Carnley, from receiving her employee spousal benefits. Those rulings must still be confirmed by the National Constitutional Court, although the plaintiffs believe that will be just a formality. South Africa's 1996 constitution was the first in the world to explicitly prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation. Kagomo called discrimination against same-gender couples unwarranted, dehumanizing, stereotypical, unjustified, and consequently unfair.
Unmarried cohabitants in Washington, D.C. are a step closer to gaining recognition following a vote in the U.S. House of Representatives this week. Washington City Council adopted an ordinance in 1992 to establish a partner's registry carrying hospital visitation rights and the opportunity for city employees to buy into their group health plan to cover their partners at their own expense. But Washington must rely on congressional appropriations for the bulk of its budget, and since 1992, those funds have been conditioned on complete suspension of the city ordinance. Last week, openly gay Republican Representative Jim Colby of Arizona succeeded in removing the ban from the House version of the annual city funding bill, although that bill would still require the city to use non-federal funds for its domestic partners registry. When the bill this week reached the floor of the Republican-controlled House, Republican Representative Dave Weldon of Florida attempted to reinstate the ban, arguing it would preserve the integrity of marriage. His amendment had the vocal support of Majority Whip Tom DeLay of Texas, but 41 Republicans broke ranks to join all but 18 Democrats in defeating Weldon's proposal. The version of the Washington funding bill in the Democrat-controlled Senate also omits the domestic partners' ban, but that may well have been the cause of controversy that delayed a scheduled vote on the bill this week in the Senate Appropriations Committee.
The House added a new anti-gay twist before overwhelmingly approving Washington's funds for the coming year. Thanks to an amendment proposed by Republican Representative John Hostetler of Indiana, the city is prohibited from spending any money to enforce a landmark ruling against the Boy Scouts of America by its Human Rights Commission. The commission had found the Scouts illegally discriminated against two gay men seeking to become Scout leaders, awarding each man $50,000 plus legal fees. Some Democrats argued the House should at least delay interfering until the courts have decided the Scouts' appeal of the commission's decision. But 54 Democrats joined all but 8 Republicans in passing the amendment, which Hostetler said was necessary to stop a ruling counter to our most basic liberties.
Those gays and lesbians wishing to defend those basic liberties by serving in the U.S. Armed Forces have yet to get any breaks as a result of the Bush administration's authorization of a so-called stop-loss policy. This week, the Air Force became the first service branch to follow through on the authorization, ordering a 30-day suspension of most administrative discharges so as to keep personnel available for combat. But the Air Force order specifically requires continued processing of discharges for violations of the so-called Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy on military service by gays and lesbians. Past stop-loss orders issued during armed conflicts from World War II through the Persian Gulf had all served to suspend so-called gay discharges until hostilities ceased. In announcing the stop-loss authorization last week, the Pentagon had indicated that action on Don't Ask, Don't Tell discharges would be left to commander's discretion. But in announcing the Air Force order this week, a different Pentagon spokesperson said of Don't Ask, Don't Tell that the law is the law. Nonetheless, the San Francisco Examiner has reported military officials saying a de facto suspension of Don't Ask, Don't Tell is already reflected in the actions of many commanders. The Service Members Legal Defense Network has again warned gays and lesbians in uniform to assume that Don't Ask, Don't Tell is being fully enforced.
The government of the Australian state of Tasmania has acted to amend its Anti-Discrimination Act to expand religious exemptions. In response to lobbying by the Catholic Education Office, the state government drafted what it claims is merely a clarification of the existing religious exemption in the civil rights law. But the Tasmanian Gay and Lesbian Rights Group accused the government of selling out, calling the move a grubby backroom deal which gives religious schools and welfare agencies the green light to sack gay and lesbian teachers and social workers. The group feels the government's failure to consult it on matters vitally affecting its constituency undermines that government's declarations about Tasmanians working together in the recently issued official 20-year plan to end discrimination in the state.
Australia's federal government also raised activists' ire this week by denying a visa to Peter Tatchell, who was born and raised in Australia before emigrating to become Britain's best-known gay activist. Tatchell was seeking to visit Brisbane for the annual Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting, in part as a reporter for the BBC. It's presumed to be Tatchell's plans to seek the arrest for human rights violations of Zimbabwe's homophobic President Robert Mugabe that led Australian Immigration Minister Philip Ruddock to deny Tatchell's visa with authority generally used against criminals. The Australian Democratic Party joined Tatchell in protesting the decision. The Commonwealth meeting had been scheduled to begin in the coming week, but shortly after the Tatchell story broke, Australian Prime Minister John Howard postponed the meeting in light of the recent terrorist attacks on the U.S.
Canada's broadcasting regulator has ordered two major cable TV carriers to cease their differential treatment of North America's first gay and lesbian TV channel, Pride Vision. Shaw Cable and Star Choice had both excluded Pride Vision from a 3-month free trial preview package unless viewers went through additional steps to request it, including proving that they are at least 18 years old. Shaw is the only cable company serving Canada west of the province of Ontario, reaching about 40% of the nation's cable subscribers, although Westerners have the alternative of satellite access. In announcing its complaint to the Canadian Radio, Television, and Telecommunications Commission this week, Pride Vision called for a boycott of Shaw and Star Choice. Activist attorney Barbara Findlay simultaneously announced that she is filing a lawsuit against Shaw on behalf of a Pride Vision viewer regarding the age verification. The conflicts are likely to intensify in the future, as Shaw has said that following the preview period, it will only offer Pride Vision by itself instead of the traditional so-called bundling with other offerings.
And finally, this week marked the U.S. premiere of The Ellen Show, the new CBS sitcom starring Ellen DeGeneres, who rocked mainstream TV in 1997 when she publicly identified herself as a lesbian, both in real life and in her character in her now-defunct ABC sitcom, Ellen. The new show was first expected last season, and its debut was then further delayed by the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. Most critics have picked it as one of the year's best new offerings. DeGeneres joked about struggling with CBS over the new show's name, saying, "They wanted Ellen in the title, absolutely. I wanted Cindy Crawford in the title. I thought more people would watch."
That's News Wrap for the week ending September 29th, 2001, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm John Beaupre.
Your image of patriot will never be the same after an unusual history lesson from a gay novelist later in the program. Gay, lesbian, bi, and trans activists are signing on early to the resurgent anti-war, anti-racism movement, one response to the events of September 11th. But as This Way Out's Lucia Chappell reports, it's not just a matter of Falwell fallout.
...2,500 people demonstrated in Los Angeles, and thousands more took to the streets in Washington and San Francisco on September 29th to call for peace and an end to anti-Arab violence in the wake of the recent terrorist attacks on the U.S. Ironically, the Reverend Jerry Falwell helped to fuel the movement with his widely publicized and later retracted assertion that progressive achievements like gay and lesbian civil rights set the stage for the attacks. But Joe Delaplane of the Stonewall Initiative for Equal Rights says that's just one reason why his group played a key role in organizing the protest at Los Angeles' West Side Federal Building.
We are working with a coalition of people that are both secular and religious, gay, lesbian, bi, transgender, straight, peace activists, individuals, whatever, basically working against this racist attack on people of color, Arab American, Middle Eastern people, even people just presumed to be Middle Eastern. Also responding to the attack by Jerry Falwell. Also against this war as well, because we don't think responding to, it's a tragedy, and we don't want to compound that by having more life lost, because there's already been life lost here in this country perpetrated by other people who either think they're being patriotic, or maybe it's getting some of these homophobes and racists coming out of the woodwork, thinking this is an excuse to wave a flag to beat the hell out of someone. Three people have been killed. There's been a lot more people injured. There have been women attacked. Women have contacted us saying that they're afraid to go out of their houses. There's kids being yelled at and beaten up at school. They're being called terrorists, which I can personally identify with because, I mean, they used to call me faggot. So it's, you know, name-calling and harassment and isolation during lunchtime and being chased and all that is nothing new to gay, lesbian, bi, and transgender people. So that's, we were standing up for them before Jerry Falwell said what he said. And he only said it to divide the country against us and against people of color. So I wanted to really get the word out, especially in the gay community, because we have been intimidated our entire lives. We've been intimidated. We've been targeted by the FBI and the CIA, with Bush talking about escalating domestic spying, tapping phones, reading email. We were called, whatever, security risks for decades. We don't want to go through that again. And we want to use our experience to protect more people and not have them fired or killed or beaten up or intimidated, because we're all, it's all, you know, one struggle. We're all supporting each other. In Orange County, there's signs on back of cars. People are painting. They're not just going hog wild with the flags. They're painting Bin Laden sucks cock, Bin Laden's a fag, kill all Bin Laden faggots. So they've already tied us into what's going on. Gay men can't donate blood. The American Red Cross has banned it since 1985. Libby Dole was heading the Red Cross. Now she's going to replace Jesse Helms. I don't think that's a coincidence. I think rather than donate blood, gay men should, who want to help, who are being turned away by the American Red Cross, should get involved with this movement to protect lives. And also, don't donate blood by lying. If you're a gay man, don't lie. You're letting them off the hook. You should push to get them to stop their homophobic policies. I'm already being stopped at work. I'm having to show two forms of ID. Driver's license is being used already as a federal ID thing. I'm worried that people who are immigrant workers or day workers or whatever, I can't imagine the kind of intimidation they're going through because based on the color of their skin, or they're already, it's basically we're suspects and we have to prove our innocence as opposed to the other way around. So, you know, it's just a tiny, tiny taste of what Palestinians go through every single day. I don't want to see it escalate. And the LAPD hasn't proven themselves as defenders of civil liberties. You know, all that stuff didn't go away overnight. They are still the same abusers, attacks on women, people of color, gays and lesbians, that they always have been. The FBI haven't proven themselves trustworthy. The CIA certainly hasn't. You know, and Bush is no friend of the gay and lesbian, bi and transgender community either.
One, two, three, four. We don't want your racist voice!
Several of the demonstrators who answered the call from Joe Delaplane and the Stonewall Initiative for Equal Rights admitted being inspired by Falwell, but say they placed that incident in a larger context.
That was really appalling. That was trying to use us as a scapegoat for all the other U.S. imperialistic policies that kill millions of people worldwide. And I believe as a lesbian and as a woman of color and as an individual and as a person who loves other people and humanity, I need to be here.
There are a lot of issues here that we've dealt with AIDS. Racism, the other, demonizing people that I almost wore a shirt that says ignorance equals fear. It's a herring shirt, and I think that's what's happening here. As an AIDS activist and a gay man, we've learned some tools, and hopefully we can bring those tools to the peace movement. But more than that, hopefully this is not just a peace movement, this is a movement for economic equality in the world.
What I'm concerned about now is that many gay and lesbian people don't see it, that they don't need to be lining up with the forces of repression in the world. They need to be with the forces of liberation and people who support peace and justice, not those who support war and totalitarian control. I'm not for a world order of corporate rule. It's not in my interest as a working class gay man, and it should not be in the interest of any gay or lesbian person who cares about people, no matter what class they're from.
West Hollywood Mayor Steve Martin spoke at the rally.
I'm scared, and I'm afraid. I think we all should be. If this administration's war on terrorism is half as ineffective as this nation's war on drugs, we've got every reason to be very, very, very afraid. You know, we stand here today as Americans, as patriots, watching our country getting caught up in a riptide of national pride and prejudice. And I have to say, as a gay man, I'm very, very proud of you, because it was your voices that silenced Jerry Falwell. When Jerry Falwell pointed his finger and blamed the September 11th tragedy on gays and lesbians, on people who support a woman's right to choice, on people who support the separation of church from state, you guys, you are the people that stood up and said no. You're the people that said no to homophobia, no to sexism, no to racism, no to scapegoating. And you have a powerful voice. Now, I know today a lot of folks in the media are going to say that we speak for a minority of people, but we don't. We're speaking for the silent, but soon to be very vocal, majority of Americans. Millions and millions of people. So thank you, God bless you, and we will not be silent.
That was West Hollywood Mayor Steve Martin. At the Westside Federal Building in Los Angeles, this is Lucia Chappell for This Way Out.
Hi, this is Terry Sweeney, and with me is Nancy Reagan. You know, whenever I'm home alone at the ranch and Ronnie's asleep, I listen to This Way Out. It's the only way out for me.
You say you want a revolution. devolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world.
Paul Lussier has put the revolution back into the American Revolution with his new novel, Last Refuge of Scoundrels. The openly gay television producer spent nearly a decade researching the book, which, among other things, reveals that George Washington's chief strategist was a cross-dressing prostitute. It's fiction that's just as true as the history you probably learned in school, as This Way Out's Rita Gonzalez discovers.
Your novel portrays the darker side of the American Revolution. Is this because it's from the point of view of the common person?
Certainly. When you go to the diaries of the common man, the 18th century equivalent of today's email, what you find is that there was, in fact, a spirit of revolution which was completely and distinctly separate and held as separate by common popular opinion from the war for independence. That there was a quest for utopic fairness, that there were women rioting in Boston Common for a greater voice in their male households. There were Native Americans rioting for rights. Boston was a virtual Calcutta of civil strife and discontent. And the fact that when you and I study the early days of the American Revolution in Boston as being essentially about a stamp tax is literally a complete rewriting of history. The stamp tax was only the bailiwick of the rich, and the man on the street who didn't have a pot to pee in could not, would not, and should not have concerned himself with taxes and didn't.
Would you agree that American history is often whitewashed?
Well, certainly. I mean, the truth of the matter is not only is it more than whitewashed, there is a rewriting that has happened. There is something very insidious in portraying the history of the war for independence as a parade of the founding fathers. It seems very patriotic. It seems very comfortable. But what happens when you do that, when you research, as I did for 10 years, the Diaries of Common Folk, you see how the degree to which we apotheosize the founding fathers is the degree to which we shut out the voice of the common man. You shut out the voice of minorities. You shut out the voice of blacks. You shut out the voice of the 18th century version of gays and lesbians. And in shutting that out of a story that is so profoundly important to our culture, you shut them out of the political infrastructure. So my intention in writing a novel where we would see that there was a spirit of revolution that cannot, should not, must not be shut out of our history, and that that spirit was part and parcel responsible for helping our country earn our freedom.
But how historically accurate is your novel?
To be sassy, the novel is no less a fiction than our traditional historical narrative is. In order to really educate ourselves about our history, it is very important that we understand just how fictional our traditional history is. Because to come up with that perspective, you need to exclude so many voices, so much data, so many riots, so many experiences that it amounts to a fiction. Now, have I taken liberties? Of course I have. My intention was to write a novel that would be a page-turner, would be entertaining, would be appealing, would be funny. And revisionist historians have been slogging away at this stuff for 30 years now, coming up with all of this new information, which does pay homage to gays and lesbians and other minorities. But guess what? It hasn't made a dent in the popular imagination. The popular view of American history is as sanitized as ever. And that's when I decided, I know what the problem is here. We're all locked up in academia. We're preaching to the choir. And it's time to popularize this and to come up with a competing mythology, popular mythology, that can reach out to the mainstream and begin changing the hearts, souls, and minds of everyday folk. Facts do not change hearts. Stories do. And we in the progressive movement have neglected the power of story. And by the way, the right wing doesn't. They are parable city. And that's part of the problem. They live, they teach, they advocate by parable, by stories. And we on the left have sort of been self-righteous and smug about that and have not reached out. And this is my attempt to reach out to the everyday man.
In the novel, most of the founders of our country suffer under your scrutiny, except for George Washington. What made him different, in your opinion?
Well, I really do believe George Washington deserves the moniker Father of Our Country, but for reasons entirely different than he is traditionally celebrated. There was this tremendous gap between the concern of the founding fathers, who only wanted an economically independent republic. They had no interest in utopia. They had no interest in reaching out to the common man. And in fact, one of their biggest concerns was even arming the common man for fear that those guns would be turned on themselves. George Washington, however, even though he went into the war as a military aristocrat with no interest, he even wrote about the men and women of Cambridge, that they were a nasty, brutish, stinky lot of man, and he wanted nothing to do with them. He had this image that it was going to be a fancy red-coated army, and he was going to give the British a big FU by ultimately creating an army that was every bit as pretty as their army was. Well, however, in order to win this war, George Washington was forced to live cheek by jowl, elbow to elbow, with the other half, with the other side. And he came up against the tapestry of America, people from all diverse walks of life that he not only had to support and work with and cooperate with, he saw fit to embrace. He understood that a man who wanted to dress as a woman or a woman who dressed as a man had a keen kind of perspective from the other side that he could avail himself of to cross enemy lines, for example, like my lead character does. He not only was indulgent of cross-dressers, etc., he embraced them. He saw their perspective was pivotal to the winning of the war. But he formed a guerrilla army of spies around him, which were plucked from what was the 18th century equivalent of a gay and lesbian community, a black community, a Native American community, even a community of mentally challenged folk. A whole secret little weapon of his that there were books written about in the 50s, and guess what? They're all out of print now, because that story doesn't serve the status quo. And so George Washington, embracing these people, ushered our way to independence, and these people formed a critical, pivotal role. And among those people, of course, my two lead characters, John and Deborah.
In the conclusion of his conversation with This Way Out's Rita Gonzalez, Last Refuge of Scoundrels author Paul Lussier describes some of the adventures of John and Deborah, which even a novelist couldn't improve upon.
All of the cloak and dagger machinations, all of the clever ruses and disguises that she avails herself of in the book are true. I did not make one of those. I couldn't be that clever.
More with revolutionary scoundrel Paul Lussier next time on This Way Out. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, John Beaupre, Graham Underhill, Chris Ambidge, Brian Nunes, Jason Lynn, Rex Walkner, and Rita Gonzalez contributed program material. Thanks also to Chris Allen. The Beatles sang Revolution, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. Just point your browser to www.planetout.com and click first on multimedia, then on radio. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded through direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. For an urgent message about This Way Out's critical financial situation, please visit our webpage at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on WRSU New Brunswick, New Jersey, 2SER Sydney, New South Wales, KUGS Bellingham, Washington, and more than 125 other stations around the world, including this local community radio station. Please stay tuned.